You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the Outkick Network, this is Outkick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
Glad you're with us. Hour number two is here. Outkick 360 rolls on. Plenty of NFL and college football discussion headed your way. We've got our overreaction chat about playoff elimination, plus coaches on the hot seat in the NFL. The headline today is with Aaron Judge, and here's John Sterling's call on WFAN last night of home run number 62.
Here's the 1-1. Swung on.
There it goes. Deep left, it is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record. Aaron Judge hits his 62nd. All the Yankees out of the dugout to greet him. Just think of it. Three Yankee right fielders. The Babe hitting 60 and 27. The Jolly Roger hitting 61 and 61. And now Aaron Judge hits his 62nd home run. The most home runs any American leaguer has hit in a single season. And the American League has been alive for 120 years. This is Judgment Day. Case closed.
There is John Sterling.
Got in a Judgment Day also. So two cliches.
Very
in the
dramatic capital. Right there. This is Judgment Day.
So, I mean, he has that whole Jolly Roger and the Babe, all that's totally scripted. He's been sitting on that.
Yeah.
For
well, I mean, he's been waiting as long as everyone else for this.
I'm telling you, the video
Michael
of his face.
A little more natural.
Oh, there it goes. And you can almost hear his notes shuffling as it happens. There it goes. High, it is far. And that is passing the Jolly Roger.
I hate John Sterling. I like Michael Kay. I'm used to seeing a radio guy's call. So when they showed John Sterling doing it, it wasn't weird. They showed Michael Kay doing it. It made me very uncomfortable. Kay doing it with Cone next to him and Meredith Marakovich, their sideline person, also in the booth. It just made me, I don't know, cringe seeing the TV guy do the call.
See, normally I've seen it before, right?
Well, I saw the earlier one during this, but yeah, it's just weird. Like usually when you see them in the booth, it's they're having a little bit
of
a conversation
between
innings or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, Cone's kind of giving him the thumbs up when it's over. And Kay, you know, and I think it's habitually, I've done this sometimes when you do air stuff, like you finish your statement and you kind of back away from the mic in a dramatic fashion. It just made me very uncomfortable. I didn't like seeing the veil pulled back.
I haven't seen him do it. I've only heard it.
It's like seeing your teacher at Target when you're a kid, you're saying?
Also, he said, this really annoyed me, on the first call of 60, I guess, of 61, he said he throughout the call. He didn't say Aaron Judge's name, which is bad form for a call that's going to be tagged on something. Now, last night he said he on first reference, but second reference he said Aaron Judge. Once that was pointed out to me, Andrew Marchand, the New York Post media critic, pointed it out. I could not get that out of my head. And so last night when I heard it for the first time, I was listening for that right out of the gate.
For the name.
And when he said he on the first one, I was like, oh, he's blowing it. So, you know, and I was kind of cheering for him to nail it.
For all the pressure of getting the call right, first Aaron Judge has to hit the home run, and he was feeling the pressure. Here's Judge's comments on that and looking at the schedule and knowing that the time was now if he was going to do it.
I can't lie. The past couple of games, I'd look up, and it's the seventh inning, and I'm like, dang, I only got one more at bat. I better figure this out. You know, I never tried to focus on the number, never tried to focus on going out there and doing it. Just go out there and play my game. And if I'm good enough and God willing, it'll happen. So nothing, just having that type of faith, I think, kind of helped me out through this whole process.
And the Rangers pitcher served it up for him on that first at bat.
Yeah, it was a nice pitch.
I mean, well, McHenry will join us tomorrow on some of the analytics of it. But That was right in the wheelhouse to get it over with. When will we find out if he's playing? When do they release the lineup for today?
I'm thinking it's a, it might be a, either 6:05 or 7:05 Central start. Lineup usually comes out
roughly.
Somewhere around now.
Do you owe anything to the fans that probably paid a lot of money?
On the road?
In hopes that this would happen? For Major League Baseball's sake.
I don't think so.
To play but in the game?
I think if he wants to play, he'll play. And he indicated he wants to play.
I would let him play. I mean,
with all this time off,
yeah,
DH him.
Yeah, let him go. Yeah, take the at bats.
Maybe give him three. And you know, if he's on fire and then he's in it for the batting crown somehow, let him keep going. Otherwise, pull him. I thought it was cool that they pulled him last night. That would have been awesome if it was Yankee Stadium.
Yes.
You send him out to right field and then you pull him. The place would have been unbelievable.
In the NFL, this has been the most competitive start to a season that we've seen, at least on the scoreboard. So far, 50 games have been within one score in the fourth quarter. That's the most in the history of the league through week four. This past week, 15 of 16 games were within one score entering the fourth quarter. That's the most in a single week. And then it was the Sunday night game. It was a Sunday night game that wasn't. And through 4 weeks, 23 games have been decided by 3 points or less, and 31 have been decided by 6 points or less. That's the most to this point. That's why the NFL is saying it's the most competitive. And Vrabel said it today here in Nashville. Mike Vrabel, head coach of the Titans, said half the league's 2-2.
Yeah,
Titans are one of them. But, I mean, you look around, and everyone's had some ups and downs to the point where, as a fan, if you're a fan of the Cowboys, to the Rams, to the Bengals, to the unbeaten Eagles, not much to complain about there, but I'm sure they are complaining about something in Philly. Fan base, for the most part, has been able to have some emotional reactions on Mondays, good and bad, and that's perfect for the NFL.
That's why you mentioned Vrabel. I mean, they played some crappy football in Indianapolis, but they won by damn 7, and they're 2-2, like you said.
Yeah.
And so knowing that they're not in a great stretch right now, going to Washington this weekend against a really bad team, winning by 7 on a weekend where everybody's playing 3-point games, win by 7 and get to 2-2. You know, Derrick Henry had an interview coming off the field with Christina Pink where he was like, this is frustrating, we got to do a lot better, blah, 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 the kind of reaction you would expect. Then he came out of the locker room where Vrabel clearly told everybody, be happy about this. We did something here. The tone completely changed. I asked Vrabel about that today. You know, why is the messaging so important? And he went into the, you know, hard to win. Everybody's 8-8, yada, yada. I can understand it. And Henry's tone was completely different coming off the field and after he got, you know, walking orders from the coach.
Almost feels like it's rigged to where everybody's just going to end up having something to be interested about every week. If it goes true to form, Washington wins on Sunday to make things interesting in the NFC East for them a little bit more.
Well, true to form would be the Titans playing down to an opponent. That would be true to form.
Yeah, and scoring on the first drive of the game and never scoring again.
It's not as far down for them because they're not as good, but Washington's really bad. But I actually think, like, it's not as interesting. The close games are interesting, but everybody being 2-2, there are fewer kind of storylines right now. We talked about it yesterday. Like, there's a lot of talk about Philly. But, like, all these other 2-2 teams, I feel like we're kind of waiting to see who's what still, right? Kind of feels like we're stuck in a week one uncertainty thing still because a lot of teams haven't identified themselves yet.
Yeah, and then you've got the good teams, I think, that have started slow in some respect and have been able to get back to at least 500, or they good teams who gave up a lead and or haven't won a close game like Buffalo and come back down 17 points, their first 17-point comeback since 2011, and go win on the road against Baltimore. So I think we're starting to see the turn of in the separation, even though we're not seeing much separation in the standing.
What's Dallas, though? I mean, there are a lot of teams you could look at and say, what's this team? We could do a segment. So we wouldn't have any answer.
I want to bring up Dallas, too, because there are four teams that I'm thinking the most about right now in the NFL, and it's two different eventual showdowns. KC and Buffalo, just for the AFC.
Yep.
I look at them, and every week it's going to be interesting because those offenses are so otherworldly good.
Aaron Judge is
and
not
those
in
rosters
the lineup,
are good.
Real okay. quick.
Yeah. So Aaron Judge not playing.
And all the games are by 410 today to end the season. Sorry.
So those two teams I'm circling right now as an eventual showdown. And in the NFC, it's Eagles and Cowboys that are interesting to me because Cooper Rush is undefeated. So part of me is thinking, okay, well, then what are they with Dak Prescott? Was that just a really bad blip in week one where they couldn't do anything offensively?
Well, they're a defensive football team.
So, but that to me is now a very interesting division battle with those two teams.
It is.
So I don't, it's easy to explain Buffalo, Kansas City, but my mind immediately goes to, boy, the NFC East now to me is very interesting with those two teams, especially when Dak Prescott gets back.
Well, I think every division in the NFC has got some tremendous storylines because you've got the 49ers now with the right quarterback playing and a top defense, and the Rams as the defending champion, Rams coming back and having some struggles offensively.
Trying to figure things out.
The 49ers, again, have the head-to-head regular season win. And then in the NFC North, Rodgers looks really good. Guess what?
What is Minnesota?
Minnesota's good.
Yeah.
And they're proving it based on, you know, Kirk Cousins isn't a long-term answer, but I think they have, he's a lot, in many ways, he's not putting up the same numbers, but it's very similar to Jalen Hurts, where they have added some talent around him. They're not as run-focused as they were with the previous regime, so they're putting the ball in Jefferson's hands. Thielen came to life again this past week. I mean, you look at them, and I think, man, they've already got a head-to-head win over Green Bay, and now they have positioned themselves, albeit it took the double doink to do it, to come back from London and string together a couple wins here.
I'll give you two in the AFC. Cincinnati has kind of found its footing after an 0-2 start.
Yep.
Can they pass protect and come back to life? I'm not ready to give up on them, and that division is wide open. Cleveland's got some life to it. The Ravens are you know, Lamar Jackson is a terror, but the defense has some issues, and they're beatable. I think Cincinnati's a very interesting team going forward. And look, before the Tua concussion stuff, Miami was the story of the league. What's his status? What can they do without him for however long he's out? Bridgewater's not a bad backup.
No.
And they're a good team. This is the thing you tell yourself, hey, can we go 500 or can we win two out of three while our backup quarterback's in? Maybe it's only this one game, you know, because he will have had a mini bye and then a week. But I'm still very intrigued by Miami. The era was as up on Miami as anybody before the concussion stuff came down. So those are two teams that I think, Chad, to your point about the Bills and Chiefs, that can enter that conversation and be right there if they straighten things out. Another one I'll bring to you is the Chargers, who things have not gone so well for. I really need to know about A-Bear's chest and how long that's going to linger. They lose an offensive lineman for the season. That's a big deal. That's not going to help his chest recover if he's getting hammered.
Yeah.
And they've had maybe as many things go wrong for them early season as anybody.
Well,
but right now, that AFC West doesn't look as terrific outside of Kansas City as we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, Herbert looked pretty good, though, against the Texans this past week.
Yeah, he got nice ointment there in playing against the worst team in the league.
But
I don't know who they have next.
But they didn't really hit him.
Yeah.
They did a nice job protecting him in this game.
It was much better than the...
You know, he's delivering the football, but he also wasn't taking too many QB hits like he has been, to where you see him wincing. And
hopefully he's back to normal. That'd be big.
I still think that lingers, though, longer. Don't
yeah.
you?
I mean, you get one hit. I mean, even if he's fine for 2 weeks, you get another hit and it resurfaces. That would be my question, and that's why I feel a lot of doubt about my Super Bowl champ pick.
Chad, your Super Bowl pick's still alive, right? Both of them?
Yeah, got to remember who I had in there. Packers beating Chiefs. I think I had Packers over the Chiefs.
I had Bills, Rams, and I don't feel great about the Rams at all.
Neither have been mathematically eliminated yet. No. I can say that.
But we are eliminating some teams. That's always good. If not mathematically, mentally.
Yeah, we will tell them the GTFO. We've got some overreactions to what we've seen through the first month of the season, the first 4 weeks, and we've been eliminating some teams from memory over the every week. We'll do this weekly. And also,
we don't want you to remember these teams. Right. We're eliminating them from our memory, but not only that, we're going to take it a step further and tell you to not ever think about these teams again.
We will do that. Plus,
even if you're a fan, I want you to not be a fan of these teams anymore.
Coaches on the hot seat as well around the league who we think will get fired in the NFL by the end of the year or right on the Black Monday determination for a lot of franchises. There are a lot of trends that are not going the right way for some coaches who need to win and need to win fast. October will mean a lot. We'll get into that as well next on Outkick 360.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
From 6th and Peabody, with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Outkick 360 rolls on. The crew is all here. You can watch the show live, streaming live at outkick.com, and listen on this great radio station. Guys, each week we're eliminating a team. Across the NFL, we're saying we're done with them. GTFO. Started this last week, and each week we'll be keeping up with it. Here were mine from last week, where I have eliminated the Houston Texans. This is an easy one. I mean, Texans are done, and we'll find out if they want to make a coaching change or not, like they did last year with a one-and-done coach. I eliminated the Raiders at 0-3. You know, at 0-2, everyone's pointing to the extra game and how you can climb out of this, and I know the Raiders got a big win against the Broncos, but the 0-3 hole will come back to haunt them where there will not be margin for error, and they will have some bumps in the road against some quality opponents down the line. And the Jets, they needed Wilson to start the season. He couldn't. And they needed a miraculous comeback, one of the best we've seen with under 2 minutes on the road against Cleveland. And they needed to, you know, have an opportunity to face Mitchell Trubisky for a half to get a couple wins on the season. I'm done with the Jets. Even though I like some young talent, I believe it's a year too early to buy into whatever they're trying to build because their quarterback started the season late. This week, an easy one, a layup for me with the Carolina Panthers. After the Arizona Cardinals go on the road and beat them last week in Carolina, they now will face the 49ers, Rams, and Bucks over the next 3 weeks on their schedule. They have Baker Mayfield and looking for him to cash in on that one-year deal. He's been awful. Sam Darnold isn't ready to return, and the fact that that's even a sentence gives you an idea of how bad it is in Carolina right now for Matt Rhule and that franchise. They're done. GTFO Carolina Panthers this week for me.
Boy, how quickly it fell apart for Baker Mayfield
in
Carolina. That happened in a hurry. I like all of these. I like all these so much. I think I'm up next. So I'm going next to my list now, and I'm going to share some of these with you, Hutton. So the Texans, I had a buddy once who just kind of nonchalantly said, hey, they're back, right? We're talking about, well, this team's back. The Texans, not back.
Not back.
Texans, in fact, dead. I'm going to go with the Texans. I'm going to stay in the, actually, let's go with the two that I had last week first. Carolina Panthers, Hutton, totally agree with you. The fact now that Baker Mayfield was even worse this past week and that they're already almost done with him in Carolina.
But they have to stick with him.
That's a team headed for a top two or three draft pick. They're terrible. The Washington Commanders, not good. I think the Titans are going to go in there and beat them this week and further cement their status as dead in the National Football League. And the team that I'm adding to the list this week, let's go back to the AFC South. The terrible AFC South, and I'm going to go with a team that's been terrible so far. the Indianapolis Colts. Matt Ryan, if you get within 5 yards of that guy, he fumbles right now. Their star players aren't playing like star players. Their role players aren't doing anything. They had a golden opportunity when the Titans decided to just play defense for an entire half on Sunday, and they had 20 plays for 28 yards in the second half. Could not find a way to win the game. Costly turnovers throughout. Colts, they're going nowhere. They're dead.
I think it's bold, Chad. I don't think they're going anywhere either, but you have better, deader choices because the Colts are in a crap division. And you know, if Ryan Tannehill breaks his ankle and Trevor Lawrence, you know, turns south, there is a path for the Colts that's better than some teams that you don't have an X over.
I don't want to steal any of your thunder here, Paul, but quickly I'm going to go through other considerations as to why I'm picking the Colts ahead of them. Seattle, Geno Smith is playing great. They're playing much better offense than I expected.
I agree there.
I figured they would be dead by now, but they're not. Pittsburgh, I want to see Kenny Pickett one more game. If he goes out there and throws 4 interceptions and they lose again, then you know they were in consideration for me this week, but not now. Plus, they have Mike Tomlin as a head coach who's never had a losing season in the NFL. So I'm going to wait a tick on that.
You're going to wait. He faces the Bills this week.
What I'm saying, guys, is Mike Tomlin, give me the greater than sign than Frank Reich on that list. Yes. So I'm not going to eliminate Pittsburgh just yet. The Raiders, I think, is an interesting one, but I'm kind of like you, Hutton, and I'm watching that game here in Nashville against the Titans thinking, how is this roster 0-3 at that point? How are they not beating the Titans? And the answer probably is they're just not a very good cohesive football team, but they go out and get a big win this past week. So those were the ones under consideration for me, but I elected to go with the Colts.
I'll show you who you're missing coming up here.
Okay.
So I missed this last week, so I get to do a 3-pack.
Yes.
Texans are obvious place to start. They're the worst team in football. I don't think there's much debating that. And the Panthers, you guys have hit on it. I mean, Baker Mayfield was a nice idea. Hasn't panned out.
In theory, Baker Mayfield works out.
Yeah.
He looks like a quarterback that joined his team 5 weeks before it was time to practice. And I was pointing this out. The time for him to be traded was way earlier. And joining a team right before camp is not easy, and it's no miraculous, turn the switch on for him because you're joining a completely new group, and you're joining a group that's not nearly as talented.
I think you're also joining a group that probably has a good feeling that its coach is a dead man walking. We're going to get to that in a separate segment, but there's a certain vibe that goes with that. Washington Commanders are just not very good, and that's another dysfunctional franchise. There's some talent there, but not enough to be cohesive and be any good. The team you're clearly missing here, and they're two good candidates. Hutton took one. The Jets aren't going to the playoffs, though they're talent. The team that has very little talent is the Chicago Bears, who are absolutely going nowhere.
Yeah,
Justin Fields can't do a thing. I mean, the over-under on his passing yards is like 120. Going into games,
you're not winning in
the modern NFL with 120 passing yards a game unless you have some kind of outstanding defense. And newsflash, boys, the Chicago Bears do not have some kind of outstanding defense. One of the only reasons their record isn't miserable is because God gave them a monsoon on opening day against San Francisco when Trey Lance was still of able body. Chicago Bears are awful.
Pretty sure Johnny Majors in 1951 was a better passer as a halfback than what we're seeing right now from Justin Fields in Chicago. Very similar offenses, too.
I don't feel any danger about eliminating the Bears.
No.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's one I was not thinking about, but I definitely had them on my list as well.
So
this is an easy game now that's going to get progressively harder. I like it.
Well, but you've got to.
Well, we're also going to look progressively dumber when, for instance,
one of these teams will make
the Indianapolis Colts win 6 in a row here coming up.
Yeah, the Colts, we'll mock you, and it'll be fun.
I think we will eventually see Pickett will take the Steelers on some type of run, but how long does that last without T.J. Watt back? Like, how healthy is he a month from now? Is he really able to come back from that pectoral injury in week one? They are 0-7-1 without him. They need him as much as they need a change of quarterback from Trubisky.
I'm not looking to get ahead of the curve in this game. You know what I mean? I don't want to be like, I feel like the Steelers are going to take a turn for the worse here. So I'm going to – like, I thought about the Colts in that regard with some recency bias because I thought they really, really were bad on Sunday. And I don't think they're going anywhere either. But I think they're still breathing healthily right now.
Well, and
but their time's coming for an exit.
If I'm looking at Vegas versus Indy right now, the Colts' saving grace is their fourth quarter in Houston in week one to get a tie.
Yep.
Because that's what allowed a terrible Steelers team last year to get in the playoffs, was their tie against Detroit.
It's a differentiator.
So, you know, the 0-3 start for Las Vegas, that's going to come back to bite them later. Because when December rolls around, they can't have a room for error. There's no wiggle room there. The Colts have it because they have that half game with the tie in there. And, Chad, I do think they'll figure things out with Matt Ryan and gel. I'm with you, though. I think it's too little too late. They can also point to injuries at quarterback right now across the AFC. You've got Russell Wilson, who's dealing with a shoulder issue. Eventually, he's got to click with his new group. And then in Miami, where who knows about Tua and how long the concussion protocol will last? How good will Teddy Bridgewater be? And then in New England, is Mac Jones capable of coming back soon with a high ankle sprain? Generally, that takes a while. So the Colts have reason for optimism, even though we're telling you there's no reason for optimism.
Well, here's the way I look at it, too. Jonathan Taylor's not going to play on Thursday Night Football.
Right.
That feels like a desperate situation for both Broncos and Colts in this game.
And I don't think Denver's very good.
No, but
I have both been down on Denver.
I don't think they're losing at home to this Colts team without Jonathan Taylor either. So
unless Melvin Gordon wants to fumble a lot.
Give me the Broncos in that game, and then that happens,
Frank Reich's not very good. But he's better than Nathaniel Hackett in the coaching decision making.
I think you might be better than Nathaniel Hackett if you could coach the
Broncos. And I'm not very good. I don't know the intricacies of line play. I'm not a good clock manager.
This is what we discovered with Nathaniel Hackett. All you needed to be an NFL head coach is to have a wicked backhand in ping pong to be able to play with Aaron Rodgers and be his buddy. Because that's what, this guy came in and he played ping pong with him and they're pals. And Aaron Rodgers has never been happier than just palling around the facility with old Nathaniel
Hackett.
Do we
have a lot of ping pong video?
He parlayed that into a head coaching
job. Do we just know about the ping pong, or have we seen some of the ping pong?
No, it was something on.
Feels like it should be real sports. There should be video.
One of these primetime games I was watching, they went to the sideline reporter and Nathaniel Hackett really bonded over ping pong with Aaron Rodgers.
Then did they do a graphic like where they put up the yardage per game and had like a ping pong thing? They've really gone out of control with some of the Monday Night Football graphics.
So here's what I want to see now moving forward.
Or Sunday Night Football graphics.
Nathaniel Hackett, who I've already buried as a head coach in the NFL, is going to be a failure, probably a one and done. I want to see, similar to the way actors in Hollywood try to avoid being typecasted in one part, they might turn down a part that could be lucrative because they don't want to only get offered that type of role from there forward. I want NFL owners and GMs to stop looking at people associated with great quarterback play that are their position coaches as plausible NFL head coaching targets.
It's worked a lot.
Where?
Shanahan, McVay.
What's the great quarterback, though, that they coached? They're from an actual coaching tree. I'm talking
that
about
had success.
I'm talking
with a lot
about Nathaniel Hackett. I'm talking about
Adam Gase. Those are the two
Adam
big
Gase
examples.
Adam Gase in Miami and with the Jets, who's connected to Peyton Manning. Here's my point. It doesn't have to be a disqualifier if you've done more than that and you've done a lot of other varied things. Maybe you've worked
That's
with
reasonable.
A bad quarterback and gotten more out of them than expected. But I hate the let's go to Pat Mahomes' quarterback coach next and make him a head coach. Unless you're the person that devised the offense, which we know it's Andy Reid, and he's not going to leave. But if you're the person who helped devise the offense that unlocks something
Matt
for a player
Nagy got a job out
previously
of that.
Unseen, then go for it. How
Matt Nagy's your guy.
And how that
he was a fail. Yeah. No, I think you're making
well, and
a
then
good
his
point.
Quarterback coach is now the play caller in New York for the Giants, Mike Kafka.
So I just
that was
I
he was there
see,
last year.
Do more than that. I'm fine with the hiring young guys that, but
yeah, the McVay types have done more than that. LaFleur, McDaniel,
Cincinnati,
O'Connell.
If you told me, you know, Nathaniel Hackett, and I'm going through his entire resume right now, but his biggest claim to fame, so
other than his father,
yeah, other than his father, was he was offensive coordinator for 3 years with the Jags. And then he went to be offensive coordinator, quarterback coach with Green Bay and
so
Rodgers.
Is he of the Bortles era?
I think so. 2016 to 2018.
Yeah. The board. So he was there for 2017,
which they went to the AFC Championship game.
I just need to see more than that with more variety to be an NFL head coach. I think that should be a cut. Well, I think Adam Gase.
Then you're going to hire a lot of retreads then if you do that.
I don't know. I mean,
who's qualified based
on
that?
Here's so Mike McDaniel. Okay, I think this is an example, and you might say, well, he hasn't done a lot, but he is of the Shanahan tree. Mm-hmm. He's been at different places. He's a run game guy, not necessarily the quarterback guy. It's just outside the box with him. I'm probably contradicting myself a little bit because it's not like he has this long resume. He's a young guy. But
he's not a hem of the garment guy. That's what you're against.
Like
the hem
that,
of the garment.
I
guy.
Like that resume.
Oh, he's
a
been
lot
that
better.
For. He was there. That's the whole background of him. Everywhere Kyle Shanahan has gone, he has followed. Starting with Washington, all the way through Houston and everywhere.
Hem of the quarterback garment.
Yeah, I'm saying not hem of the player. Just benefiting from a great, you know, generational quarterback is different from even following a coach.
He's creating a small category that's a Gase and Hackett right now.
Yeah, it's kind of so. It's the equivalent. The NFL equivalent to me is a guy attached to a great quarterback where the quarterback is doing pretty much all the work for the offense, getting the big promotion and getting a head coaching gig, to me is akin to a number of failed Nick Saban assistants that got big-time head coaching opportunities because they were so closely associated with Nick Saban. That's the college pro difference. College, it's attachment to the coach that gets you a job you're probably not ready for or equipped to handle. And in the NFL, it can be attached to the player.
The McVay tree is just sick. I mean, the names that we just lit, the McShay-Shanahan deal is just crazy.
Yeah. And then you have the guys who are, you know, the grunt work guys. And, I, you know, you've got
Arthur Smith.
Arthur Smith comes to mind because he's coached a lot of different positions. He was a play caller. He made...
He's unknown.
The players with him better. And then
survive multiple coaches.
Since he's left, the offense is worse for a number of reasons, including their play caller, because he's not Arthur Smith. And so now he's in Atlanta taking heat because he's a run first offense right now as they try to figure out what they're building at quarterback long term.
Next year, the Falcons will be good.
Yeah. And they've, you know, they're
2-2 this year.
They've lost. They've got, but their backup's in at running back now.
Yeah, Patterson.
Yeah, so Cordell Patterson's out for at least a month. But they're still. I mean, they're running it at a clip where. I mean, someone was joking about just running the option.
They're better than they have business being, and he's one of those coaches. I think Blank's a good owner with patience who understands what he inherited in terms of personnel and what he inherited in terms of cap. And next year, they get out from under that cap. They can shop for some legit free agents. They'll probably be in reasonably good draft position again. Well, and if Ridder takes over from Mariota somewhere here, they'll get a read on Ridder, and they'll know if they need a quarterback.
But the only detriment to that long-term argument is everyone knew and knows they wanted Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
And that's why they're paying Matt Ryan, even though Matt Ryan's not there. So like the fan base is saying, like, we're just going to run all this. Can we not – we traded Matt Ryan away. We're paying the salary. You can't – have him here, and the reason why they don't want him there is because Matt Ryan looks over his shoulder and says, you were chasing Deshaun Watson.
Well, do you want him there based on what he's doing in Indianapolis?
Well, he was, I mean, have you...
I mean, based on the cash, maybe.
I mean, you're paying him. So they're, you know, they're hamstrung because they're so tied up financially, yeah. And it's like, well, we're you traded this guy away, and now we're just kind of waiting to see you play Ritter, but they're not going to because Mariota's in there right now.
Yeah, he's doing all right. But you know my theory on that. He'll get hurt.
He'll get hurt eventually. And he'll get hurt running, which is what they're doing. But, he's got young talent around him with Drake London, who's played well.
Kyle Pitts,
yeah. who they're finally distributing to. Have over the last couple of weeks there.
They've
done a decent job. It's a slow build, though. And the thing, that's what's frustrating probably to Atlanta fans, is you see some teams do it quick. And Atlanta's structure is not built for the quick turn.
But what's the rush if that division is going to continue to disappoint and they're going to hang around a little bit to move to finding out what you have in Ritter? Right? I mean, just keep it going.
Well, because are you drafting a quarterback next year is the big question.
But if Mariota is going to be as bad as people expect.
But he hasn't been, so they can't. It's not that. It's not that.
You're a quarter in. At some point, the clock starts ticking on you having to figure out next year.
I understand, but you may not figure that out, that you're out of the playoff race in that division for a long time.
It's another conundrum for them.
Just like last year for them.
Yeah, so I don't. You try to win. I mean, that's first and foremost. You play
the
guy.
Let the GM worry about it.
Even if you're sacrificing the ability to find out what you have in your backup quarterback, you play to win until it's lost, and then you find out.
And Arthur, that could take a while. Let's Fontenot worry about it.
And how we've been discussing the Falcons here is the way he replied to the media there, which is, well, you've already been writing my obituary already, so right. What does it matter if we lose week one?
We're already dead, so we're not scared.
And he's like, we're going to continue to do this. We've got the entire season ahead of us. And now you look over and you see Atlanta and what they've done and know that they have the majority of their division games coming up. The Colts, meanwhile, they're going to be done with the Jags and the Titans by October 23rd. You know,
such bad scheduling for Titans Colts to be over that quickly.
It was last year,
and it was last year. So, I mean, I can understand a one-year blip, but then you look at the schedule, and when you're looking at it, you go, didn't that happen last year? We can't do that 2 years in a row. I understand it's complicated, but I don't know. It doesn't seem to happen to other teams and other division rivalries. That second Titans-Colts game has to be in December.
Patriots quarterback Mac Jones returned to practice today.
Is that a high ankle sprain?
Yes.
There's no way he's going to be all right to go.
And it was week three when he suffered it. We're going into week five. I mean, high ankle sprains.
Limited.
I just said they, during the open portion of practice, which was a light session, generally speaking, I'm reading this from The Athletic, Bill Belichick said post-practice he's making progress, called him day-to-day.
Yeah. I would be really surprised if it's truly a high ankle sprain, if he's back after missing one game.
Yeah, for anyone like, Mac's back, let's play him in fantasy. No, I don't think he's playing. But this is now, because he was at practice last week and did something, and he did enough to where Mike Reese and others were mentioning it. And you start to go, maybe sooner rather than later.
But it'll probably be, we don't know about concussion protocol.
For Hoyer.
So, I mean, their quarterback thing, if the Giants weren't in the mess, they would be, the Patriots would be making headlines for quarterback uncertainty.
What if it was Bailey Zappe that's the next Tom Brady all along and not Mac Jones? Wouldn't that be a twist?
That would be amazing to have that story again 25 years later.
Mac Jones isn't Brady. He's Bledsoe. And now it's making way for Bailey Zappe to come in from Western Kentucky and to dominate.
Except you're insulting Bledsoe because Bledsoe did some things.
Bledsoe had accomplished a few things in his career.
Yeah. But I like where you're going. That would be very interesting. And I would definitely remember to give you credit for it. I think I would.
I will never allow you not to give me credit for it if it happens.
So we're covered.
I'll never forget it.
We're covered.
I'll say, remember that day in 2022 when I said Bailey Zappe's the next Tom Brady and you guys laughed?
He's got a great arm.
And that Jones is Bledsoe.
He made some history at Lambeau. The first appearance for a career in throwing a touchdown pass. No one had ever done that at Lambeau before.
Really?
And Bailey, making your first appearance in the NFL. And then he came in and threw a touchdown pass.
You would think some rookie quarterback, like a Vikings or Bears.
Open the season there.
Well, not Bears, so that's why it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because the Bears have been a regular opening day opponent at Lambeau, and the Bears have never had a rookie quarterback throw a touchdown pass.
You mean Mike Tomczak didn't start his career off with a touchdown pass in Lambeau?
I've solved the mystery on that stat.
Also, there was a prop in Vegas for first rookie quarterback to throw a touchdown pass. It's Bailey Zappi.
Nobody won it.
Nobody cashed
that.
No one
that
I've seen.
If you have that, please tweet the ticket.
I think it was Pickett or Ritter that were the most bet options there, and it ends up being Bailey Zappi from Western Kentucky.
Love it.
Hit us up at Outkick 360. Coming up, we discuss home run ball number 62, the value, and what we would do with it. And have we seen reports on what the Yankees are trying to do?
No.
For the baseball?
This is Simon's big question. My son
wants
to know if the Yankees will pay the $1 million.
Let's discuss this.
Or the $2 million.
That's next on Outkick 360.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Outkick 360 rolls on across the Outkick network. So we know Judge is not in the lineup, which means 62 is 62.
Golden
on
ticket.
The home run
he
baseball.
Might pinch hit.
Oh, gosh. Huh. I'm just saying the guy holding on to 62.
Oh.
When he comes in to pinch hit, just...
just there's no way.
Wait, how nervous you would be, though.
There's no way. There's no impact win or lose here, right?
No.
At all.
Do they have 99 wins? There's no impact to anything playoff-wise.
They're not going to pinch hit Judge, try to get to 100 wins.
I mean, if you're in a crucial situation in this game, why not throw him up to bat?
No. The Marlins are minus 195 against the Braves today because they're not playing anyone.
If you're not going to let him play DH just to extend his home run record in the AL, you're not going to care.
Yeah,
a crucial moment in the game.
They're not going to suddenly be like, you know what? Screw these Rangers.
I'm not saying it's a major thing, but I'm saying if you're down 3-2 and the pitching matchup's good for Judge, why wouldn't you put him up just for one at bat and then put him back on the bench?
Every pitching matchup is good for Judge.
Yeah, there's no way.
I think it's conceivable he gets
starting them. No, by not starting them, they're not playing.
I wanted them to play him.
He is ineligible to play today if they're not starting him. I mean, it's a funny thing to think about them bringing him up in a pinch hit situation just because the nerves the guy holding on to the 62nd home run.
So what is
it's 1-1 bottom of the third.
So the best offer is the standing offer of $2 million. Is that correct?
Well, that's the only offer that I'm aware of.
Well, the story that I've seen, that there's multiple out there that have said that multiple people have offered $1 million.
Paul, 99 and 62. The Yankees are at 99 wins right now.
I want that. I want them to win today. I don't care if Judge is involved.
Braves are 101 and 60.
1-1 bottom of the third.
How long would you guys hold on to the baseball?
I would
immediately
sell it.
So the guy, real quick, the guy who caught 703 for Pujols did not have his baseball verified when he left the ballpark.
That is idiotic.
And so immediately, I don't know, it may have been Ravel, maybe even someone else. Last night, you knew the section, the row, the seat, all of it for last night, and he was getting it verified. The guy who caught 703 did not get it verified, so it's not worth nearly as much.
Well, were they changing out the balls for Pujols? Like they were doing for Judge?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But Chad, knowing that you've got it verified and you can just move on and get your money, do you sell it now or do you wait? Because there are going to be more people involved in the process if you wait. Generally speaking,
Hutton, if there was someone with a standing $2 million offer to me and there was no one else calling me offering more, I would walk. I would crawl to that person.
You're Jerry Jones.
Yeah, I would crawl Jerry Jones style. I'd army crawl across this great nation to that person and accept the $2 million for the ball.
I would as well. I don't see why the market would change a heck of a lot. I'd get advice from somebody that's expert on such things, but to the question we asked kind of as a tease, like, do you foresee a team ever getting involved in this? I don't recall a team ever getting involved. Like, would the Yankees say, hey, we'll give you $1 million plus, I don't know. This guy's a Texas fan, so yeah. We'll strike a deal with the Rangers for season tickets or a box or whatever. Like, is it important to the Yankees to get it to Judge? I don't think the ball is that important to a guy. Like Judge said, I'd like to have it, but it's a huge souvenir for this guy, and I understand it. I think ultimately, you know, the guy's got a lot of important mementos in his career, and having it is not nearly as important to him as it is to the guy.
But what makes it valuable to the person that wants, or the company that wants to buy it?
Fame.
By the way, this was sent to us from Colin, our radio producer. The guy who caught the ball is vice president of Fisher Investments. It's a company that manages $197 billion worldwide. This guy is super rich.
His wife was on The Bachelorette or something?
Corey Yeomans. I saw him interviewed when they were taking him through the concourse to get it authenticated, and he seemed like a very well-to-do guy. I mean, he, you know, was dressed nice, was talking with the security guards and kind of joking around, and they're asked what he's going to do, and it seemed like a guy who'd been interviewed before. I'll put it that way, right? When they were walking through the concourse.
He had brokered a deal before.
Right. He's been in a few boardrooms in his day.
You know, if I'm Aaron Judge, it's not that important to me to have.
But if someone's offering you $2 million, what are they flipping you for? That's immediately what I'm thinking.
They're sitting on it and thinking it'll get more valuable later.
I caught a baseball at a Major League Baseball game and got $2 million for it. Wouldn't bother me what they made off
of it.
Headlines next across the NFL and college football.